You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer. I'm Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Culture here at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to my podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. Hope you enjoy as I share some thoughts with you. And please be sure to tell your friends about our podcast. Well, it's that time of year again, my friends. What happened to the summer? It just seems like the blink of an eye. And of course, this summer had a lot of great things as we celebrated the 250th birthday of the United States of America and the writing of our Declaration of Independence and all the other great founding documents. And I have to say, the Trump administration did an outstanding job in coming up with a lot of creative ways that Americans of goodwill could celebrate the blessing of living in a great country. But alas, the summer is over. We're getting ready to wind down vacations. School is starting in waves across the country. I remember when I was growing up, I think everybody, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I thought everybody started right after Labor Day. Now it seems to be all over the place. We've got relatives down in Georgia. They've actually been in school for a couple of weeks. Northern Virginia, where Carol and I live, and I work there in Washington, D.C., we just started recently. Other school districts will start what used to be the traditional start right after Labor Day. And, you know, it depends on whether you've got kids or grandkids. Our children are all grown. They're all married. We have 8 grandchildren. And among those 8 grandchildren, we've got a little tyke that just went to his first day of preschool. And we've got a grandson that just started his freshman year in high school. Hard to believe. And, you know, whether you're that new high school student worried about whether he's going to remember the combination of his locker, or whether you're that preschooler that says, "What? I'm being dropped off where?" There's been a lot of drama, let's just put it that way. So, you know, going back to school, that's sort of a mainstay of the American family. You know, there are 14,000 school districts in the country, and it wasn't that long ago that in all 14,000 school districts, by and large, not always, but by and large, parents, teachers, and school boards work together for the benefit of the students. You know, you didn't want your kid to get away with anything they shouldn't get away with. So you told the teacher, look, if he gives you any trouble, let us know. We'll take care of it at home. And teachers, if something was going on, would say to your son or daughter, look, if you keep it up, I'm going to tell your mom and dad. You know, it wasn't a perfect system, but it worked pretty well, mainly because, as I said, everybody was on the same page. Well, not so much today. So not all 14,000 school districts are, as I said, open already. Many of them are. And lo and behold, there are already battles breaking out across the nation. And I'm not talking about, oh, John thought he was going to be in a class with Mary and she's his best friend and how come he ended up in that seventh grade class and not this, that stuff. You know, that's, you can laugh about it. That's easy to deal with. I'm talking about battles over fundamental things. As, you know, you may have taught, fundamental things that, by the way, all of us at JDFI, the James Dobson Family Institute, all of us care about, and that Dr. Dobson cared about deeply during his long years fighting the good fight. So I can predict, yeah, I've already seen some news stories about it, 14,000 school districts, thousands and thousands of individual schools, and there's already battles breaking out about, you're teaching my child what? About American history? That sounds like anti-American history. You're going to introduce what about transgenderism? I mean, this is stuff, you know, we should not have to have these battles, but we are having them. Yeah, you know, it's been interesting, and we've reported on it quite a bit here, and we've talked and prayed about it at JDFI, this sudden emergence, it appears to be a sudden emergence, of the Democrat Socialists of America. And suddenly they're in the news everywhere. They've been winning Democrat primaries for House and Senate, and they've been winning those primaries in districts where they're going to be elected this November. These are districts, there are some districts in the country that are so overwhelmingly Democrat, nobody but a Democrat wins. There have even been a couple of historic cases where dead Democrats won. You heard me right. A guy gets the nomination. He dies between the primary and the general election. Hey, what difference did that make? People voted for the dead guy anyway because he was a Democrat. And there are some districts, not as many, but there are districts where if you win the Republican primary, you're going to be elected in November. Well, we know that a bunch of Democrat socialists have won these primaries, and they're going to be in the House and Senate this November. But the thing that's been kind of amazing about this, for those of us that have been following these issues for a long time, everybody's saying, where did these Democrat socialists come from? What is that? What's that about? I mean, most people never heard of it. Socialism has been around a long time. It's the early stages of Marxism. And I can tell you that even though socialists are making news in political battles for elected office right now, socialists have been active in the United States for decades, long before they started openly running for election. And the fact of the matter is that major parts of our society have been taken over by the socialist, Marxist, radical left. One of the areas that they seized control of pretty early, probably 30 years ago, maybe even earlier than that, is the universities, are the universities of our country. We've talked about this a little bit. I always bring it up because it's so bizarre. But there are more professors on the faculties of major universities who, if you ask them how they would describe their politics, will say, well, I'm a socialist, or I'm a Marxist. And some that even say, I'm a communist. There are more professors that say that who will say, after looking around to make sure nobody hears them, actually, I'm a Republican. Or, well, I call myself a conservative. Those are a rare breed on America's university faculties. And the evidence of this, well, I hope this isn't true for each of you, but one way you can tell that's true is if you sent your son off to a university and he came back or she came back after a year in the university and she sounded like Karl Marx instead of one of the founders of the United States. So this has been going on for a long time. But the socialists and the Marxists didn't stop at the universities. They went on and started promoting this radical philosophy, these radical ideas, down into the high schools and then into the middle schools and then into the elementary schools and even in the preschools, if you can believe it. Yep, we get letters. And it's not just socialism and Marxism. There's a lot of stuff about weird ideas on love and sex and what marriage is and reliable standards of right and wrong. It's all over the place, my friends. And that usually, or that often means, you know, if it's a far left city like San Francisco, the liberal parents that live in San Francisco are probably on the same page as the liberal and socialist teachers they have. If only those socialists and radical teachers were limited to places like San Francisco, but they're also in Cincinnati and Memphis and Nashville and St. Louis and all kinds of cities around America where these kinds of leftist values don't coincide with the values of the local parents and families. And that's when you tend to get these big ideological battles going on. Now, all the way back in the Reagan administration, as I've mentioned a couple of times, one of the positions I had in the Reagan administration was I was Undersecretary of Education. And Reagan wanted to get rid of that department. We weren't able to do it. Trump has made a whole lot more progress on that than President Reagan and I and others were able to make. But all the way back in the Reagan administration, we were fighting the teacher unions, which were already engaged in an ideological war against the values we held. This summer, that war continues to go on. And during this past summer, the teacher unions held their annual conventions. And what they did and said at these conventions should leave no doubt that they are not organizations of teachers who want to share ideas about how best to teach your children how to do math and talk right and develop the habit of reading, you know, all the things that will help them get jobs. No, what goes on at these conventions is they're political conventions. They're conventions that's all about socialist and Marxist ideas. Now, one of the presidents, the National Education, there are two big teacher unions. One is the National Education Association. The other one is the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers. The president of the NEA, I'm pretty sure she's still president. Her name is Becky Pringle. And, well, it's hard to describe, Becky. You know, when you're a president of the teachers union, you talk to the teachers union. Here's a little excerpt of Becky Pringle's speech. It was sometime in the last couple of years.
NEA delegates, we can do this work. We must do this work. We get to do this work. We will do this work because our students are depending on us to win all the things. NEA, we have to win all the things, all the things, all the things. Our colleagues are depending on us to win all the things. Keep going, NEA. To preserve our democracy, we must win all the things. Delegates, we won't go back. We will keep going forward because we are the NEA. We are the NEA. We are the NEA. And that's what we do.
Okay, Becky. If you have become the head of the teachers union, that means you were once a teacher and you rise up to the ranks because you're so good at what you do. And the other teachers really like your ideas and like what you say. And you're interested in spreading your ideas all over the country. Is this how you would talk in a classroom, the way Becky Pringle just talked? I mean, that was a rant. There was nothing there about thoughtfulness or let's reason together. I mean, it sounded like a ward boss in Chicago rallying the troops, you know? So, my goodness. So the point I'm trying to make is that the teacher unions have been saying and teaching what the leaders of the Democrat Socialists of America have been saying just in recent interviews. And these big two teacher unions are at war with America and conservatives, and they're at war most of all with parents and grandparents that care about the education of their children. Now, the Supreme Court had a big case a few years ago, and they decided that parents have a right to opt their children out of gender extremist courses, courses that introduce to your little girl or your little boy information about adult sexuality that is totally too much for them at an early age, or bring up stuff that, quite frankly, nobody of any age should have to learn about. And some of these people teaching this stuff are the same people that if you said, what is a woman? They wouldn't be able to tell you what a woman was. And they're going to teach our children about love and sex. So they lost this big Supreme Court case. It wasn't even close. And you would think that after losing a court case like that, the teachers union would have a press conference and say, look, we fought this. We took it all the way up to the Supreme Court. We lost. But even though we don't like the decision, this is a nation built on the rule of law. So we have put the word out to our teachers that they must obey the law. They must allow parents to know if sensitive topics are being taught. And the school district, the school board, the administrators, and the teachers must give that parent to say, no, thank you. We'll handle that at home. We don't want a stranger, an adult that we don't know well, teaching our children about these sensitive issues. That's not what the teacher unions did. Instead, they established new programs to embed LGBTQ indoctrination in every class, in every subject. So the only way you could opt your kid out of hearing about this stuff was if you took him out of the school. You know, instead of having one class about, okay, this is the transgender class or the LGBTQ class where we're going to talk about that agenda, or this is where you're going to learn about same-sex marriage, or how to avoid pregnancy without saying no to having sex. Instead, they go, oh, yeah, you think you won? Well, we're going to put it in the math class and the geography class and the spelling class. And my friends, I've looked at the curriculum. That's exactly what they've done. And you would not believe some of the ways they have gotten that kind of material into these classes. Now, the teacher unions have very active conventions. So they come up with great ideas like the one I just shared with you. This would really be funny if it wasn't so revealing. It's been almost predictable in the last couple of years that one or both of the teacher unions would pass a resolution condemning the fascism of the Trump administration. And one of the unions did that last year. The reason I say it's funny is they misspelled the word fascism. Yep, you heard me right. The teachers union, railing against the fascism of the Trump administration, couldn't spell fascism. So you can imagine how well they're doing in teaching your child to spell, right? Which is something we all want as parents, want our kids to be able to spell right. But, you know, there's now, as I said, it's kind of laughable, but really it's serious. It's one of the reasons that no matter how much money we throw at the schools, the results with our kids get worse and worse. The reading scores, the math scores, the verbal skills, the spelling skills, they go down every year, or they level off at really bad levels. And the result of this is that we're now behind 30, 40 other countries in how effectively we teach our children. And look, just between us, it's got nothing to do with money. See, that's what happens when we see these studies. We go, this is outrageous. Some of these teachers need to be fired. When they see these kinds of stories, they say, well, if we only had the money, we could do a lot better job. Well, my friends, in many of the big cities where the big problems are, we're spending $25,000, $27,000, sometimes $30,000 per student. That's right, per student, to teach a classroom. So it's not money. It's not money. Don't fall for that. But there's another thing here that's not funny, and it's not, it's more than sad. Do the teacher union members, I suspect they do know this, because they're railing against fascism, right? So fascist governments, Nazi governments, communist governments, Marxist governments, socialist governments, they all follow the same playbook. Whenever they get power, they shut down all educational options except for the government-run schools. Then they use the government-run schools to raise good little Nazis and communists and socialists. They even turn the children into weapons to be used against their parents and anyone else who dares to resist the government. So these folks that are passing anti-fascism resolutions are doing in the classroom exactly what fascists, Nazis, communists, Marxists, and socialists do. They're trying to indoctrinate your kids while they call the rest of us Nazis and fascists. Now, as I said, the teachers' unions are big political powerhouses. Every 4 years, you know, both political parties hold conventions. Every 4 years, a huge number of delegates to the Democrat National Convention are members of the teacher unions. And somebody just did a study on this. If you go back to 1990 and come up till today, 98% of all the political donations made by the teacher unions have been made to Democrats. Now, that doesn't sound like a bipartisan group interested in the education of our children. It's kind of amazing. So I bet we'll find out when the reports are filed a little later this year that the socialist teacher unions are giving a lot of money to the Democrat socialists who've defeated normal Democrats in primaries and are going to end up being in the House and Senate after the election this November, promoting their socialist ideas in the most powerful places in Washington, D.C. The unions also pass all kinds of resolutions, but you know what the resolutions are never about? I always look. You'll never see a teacher union saying, we are passing a resolution to put phonics in the classroom, because all the research shows that's the best way to learn how to spell. They never pass a resolution calling on Congress to take steps to stop violence by students in inner city schools, or resolutions urging their fellow teachers to work with parents to stop our kids from falling further and further behind. No, they pass resolutions about global warming, abolishing the federal immigration police, demanding massive cuts in the defense budget. Now, why do the teacher unions even take a position on the defense budget? I mean, if they were going to take a position on the defense budget, wouldn't the position be, please spend enough money so you can keep our children, our schools, and their parents safe from places like communist China and Putin's Russia? No, all the positions they take are the positions of the political socialist left. Now, if you need any more evidence of this, on May 1st is actually an international holiday around the world, not so much here, but around the world it's referred to as May Day. And May Day is associated with far-left political movements. It was a holiday that the communists and Marxists and socialists used over the years. And on May Day, there would be these big demonstrations of workers, sometimes revolutionary workers who wanted to overthrow governments and so forth. Well, this year on May Day, the teacher unions in a good bit of the country declared May 1st as a day of action. And they called a holiday. There was, in many parts of the country, particularly in the big cities, May Day was a non-school day. Not so they could catch up on correcting papers or preparing lesson plans, but they declared it a holiday because they wanted the students, again, your sons and daughters, grandsons and granddaughters, to be free to join left-wing demonstrations on May 1st against the president, against law enforcement, against getting people that came into our country illegally out of the country. Now, what in the world are schools and teachers and school boards that you pay, we pay the salaries of, why are they using our kids as political fodder? Most of those kids don't know anything about these issues, other than what they're being indoctrinated with in the classrooms. Yeah, you know, for the good old days. I know I'm older probably than most of you, but I still remember when kids went to school, you know, particularly as you got a little bit older, and, you know, you'd spend a little bit more time getting ready in the morning because you wanted to look nice for a young lady in your class, or maybe the young lady was trying to look nicer for the guy in the class that she was interested in. You know, maybe you worried about, why am I the only kid in class that's walking to school? How come everybody else has a car already? Or you were thinking about your homework or all the other normal things. But these days, kids are going into school and they're thinking about global warming and immigration police. And I don't know. I find it hard to believe they're thinking of those things on their own. It reminds me in back in 2000, 26 years ago, I was an underdog competitor for the Republican presidential nomination. I visited a lot of schools, and I went to an elementary school in New Hampshire to meet with little kids. And, you know, you do that not because the little kids can vote, but because the media loves these kinds of events. They show up with cameras, and it gives you a chance to, you know, show how good you are with children. And usually there's unrehearsed moments. You know, a child will ask you a question, and it's like, where did that come from? And, you know, it can be embarrassing unless you're quick on your feet or whatever. So I was in a school in New Hampshire, and I talked to, you know, the children about a lot of very simple things. I didn't want to bring up anything that would be offensive to their parents. And then when I was finished, I said, so what would you like to ask me? You know, you can ask me questions about my family or about what it's like to run for president, whatever you want to ask. And the first three questions I got, and it was only the first three because I stopped taking questions. The first three questions were little 7 and 8 year olds asking me why I hated gay people, or why wouldn't I let two men who loved each other get married? And every time one of them would ask me one of these questions, they would immediately look over to one of their teachers standing along the wall, and the teacher would wink at them and give them a little nod. These kids had been put up to ask these questions. And I said to these little children, it really wasn't their fault, I said, gosh, you know, I know I'm a lot older than you, but I still remember being 7 and 8 and 9 years old. And I remember what I was thinking about when I got to school each morning. That, were you really worried about two men getting married when you came to school this morning? And the kids again looked at their teachers because they didn't know anything to say about a follow-up. Well, anyway, the press did with what, you know, they did what you would think they would do. Bauer, right-wing candidate in the Republican battle for the presidential nomination, met his match today by 8-year-olds and a New Hampshire. It was totally biased and so forth. But my point is, this kind of, you know what, was going on 26 years ago. Well, what can we do about all this? President Trump, as I said earlier, he is dismantling the Department of Education. It's a hotbed of left-wing activism. Other Republican presidents have promised to do it. Donald Trump is actually doing it. And no, it's not going to hurt your school or your students. The Department of Education does not run any school in America. It doesn't pay for any teacher in America. That's all done at the state and local level. The Department of Education is a bunch of bureaucrats feeding a lot of left-wing gibberish to school boards, teachers, and educational establishments all over the country. Now, President Trump and congressional Republicans also passed a new educational tax credit that allows parents to claim a dollar-for-dollar credit, up to $1,700 off of their taxes, for donations they make to organizations that fund school choice scholarships. And these scholarships can be used for any educational expense, for tuition, for books, for extra tutoring. And there was only one qualification for a state to participate in this, and that was the governor of the state had to communicate with Washington and say, yes, we want to be a part of this special tuition tax credit scholarship to help our parents be able to pay for educational expenses. Well, you probably can guess what happened. A whole bunch of governors did sign up on this. They were virtually all what we call red states. They were conservative states with conservative governors. Many of the states whose parents really needed the help with liberal governments, liberal governors, their governors wouldn't sign up. Because if they signed up, that would say that people, conservatives, had done something good in Washington. And of course, these people are spending all their time telling everybody that we don't care about education, when conservatives, of course, very much care about education. Now, the president is also going after other places where education takes place that you may not think of them when you think about education, but our museums, for example, and historic sites, those have been taken over by the left too, and there's a lot of junk in them. And the Trump-Vance administration is trying to clean that up too. And of course, the media is saying that they're rewriting history, they're censoring the museum. No, that's what the socialist left did to the museum. Trump's trying to uncensor it and have it give the real story of America to families that save their money, come to Washington, D.C., and visit these museums, expecting that if they go to the American History Museum, they're actually going to see some good things about America. And then I guess I need to mention one other thing. You know, mainly because if Dr. Dobson was with us, he talked about this every election year, and that was the need to be Christian citizens. So we're going to be voting in just, you know, not that many weeks from now. Almost everybody in the country will be voting for something, the House of Representatives or governors or state legislators. A third of the states have senators up. If these people promoting socialism and the candidates that the Radical Teacher Union bosses are endorsing, if those candidates win, they're going to be crawling all over the House and Senate, and they're going to be demanding all kinds of things be done to American education that you're not going to be happy about. I'll guarantee you it will be anti-parent. It will be forcing at the penalty of schools losing their money if they don't promote transgenderism and LGBTQ ideology, and if they don't teach the accepted version of American history that paints us as a bad country, not a great country. And likewise, a couple of years from now, there'll be a presidential election, and if the left wins that presidential election, the Department of Education will not be abolished. It'll be doubled in size. There'll be more bureaucrats. And I will guarantee you the performance of our educational system and what happens with our kids, our children and grandchildren will be even worse. So the people in Washington on our side are doing everything they can. You've got to do everything you can. And that means whatever the weather, whether it's a, you know, early fall snowstorm, whether it's sleet, whether whatever it is, you need to show up and vote and make sure by voting that we can continue the education reform that's desperately needed. Well, thank you, my friends, for tuning in to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I hope you enjoyed our time together. I went a little longer than I thought I was going to go. But at least I wasn't screaming like the head of that teacher union was. I'll take that as a compliment. So good luck this first couple of weeks as you take your children or maybe even volunteer to take your grandchildren to school. Come back and be with us and check on our latest report and give your children a pat on the back and tell them to study hard. Because in America, if you study hard and work hard, you can still accomplish almost anything you set your mind to. God bless you all, and thanks for being good parents.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.